Blog Talk Radio.
Night Urban Literature Lounge live on the Tribe Family Channel, a gumbo for the soul of the National Family Brand. We invite you to listen online at blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul or call in at 347-539-5285. I'm your host, DeWandis Johnson, author of controversial bestseller Cry Baby Cry or Not, and its soon to be released sequel, All Cried Out. I hail from Chicago, Illinois, Holy City 60623. For anybody that's listening from Chicago, I just want to tell you a little bit about myself. This is our first show, and I appreciate you ladies and gentlemen tuning in to our show. I started writing at an early age, which led later on to writing little poems, and you know, which led to writing raps. Eventually, I tried my hand at writing books. Since I've written maybe 5 books, a couple of short stories. I own my own publishing company, Royal Roar Publishing Kingdom. We do try to motivate and instill change through relativity and being able to relate to people with our stories. So enough about me. I want to introduce Michelle Barad to the show tonight. She is the CEO of Urban Book Editor LLC. Michelle, how are you tonight?
I am fine. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
I thank you for coming, Michelle. We do have a little history. You are a very nice female CEO that I've had the pleasure of meeting. You know, you're very charismatic. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a native of New Orleans, transplanted recently from Atlanta to California. I am first and foremost a mother of three amazing children, and I have a wide and varied career. So it stands to reason that I would end up having my own business.
Right. Okay. Well, what motivated you to open a business, an urban book editing business?
Well, it's actually because I love reading urban books. I love reading, really, I love reading any kind of slightly trashy fiction. It's like my guilty pleasure. I don't get to do as much of it actually now as I used to, but I actually started out because I was a volunteer reviewer for a website called the Urban Book Source. And they would send me, you know, three or four books a month, and I would, you know, read them and write reviews, and they post them on their website. And I found myself at the end of my reviews always writing, edit, edit, edit. And then one day I said, Michelle, you're just being part of the problem by complaining about it. Why don't you offer a solution? So that's when I decided to start the company.
Okay. So as of today, how many books have you edited?
Are there any,
you know, famous guys that we know that you've edited their work?
I don't know that I've edited anybody who's become famous yet. I have had my fair share of what I would call an anonymous, what do I want to call it? I don't want to sound like it's pejorative the way I'm saying it, but kind of anonymous stripper books come through where they're talking about the different rappers they were dealing with.
Okay. Okay.
I did edit a book for as a subcontractor to another company. It was Lil Kim's book, which was cool.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
What was the name of that book? I haven't heard it. What was the name of her book?
I think it was called Taming Lil Kim or something to that effect. That was years ago. I don't even remember the name of the book at this point. But, I was doing that as subcontract work for her publisher.
Oh, okay. Well, have you personally written any books?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I've written a book. It's just a small guide for self-publishers. It's called Editing Your Book for Self-Publishing, and that's available on Amazon. And also I've written under my pen name, Michelle Bishop, I've written some poetry, and that book is called Love and Other Monsters.
Okay. So the first book you mentioned, you're giving some tips on self-publishers on how to edit their book?
Yeah, because a lot of people who are self-publishing, you know, they're financing their own projects. They sometimes don't want to spend the money on an editor. And even if you're sending something to an editor, you should be editing yourself beforehand.
Right.
And actually, not just editing, you should be rewriting your manuscript probably
definitely
at least twice, maybe three times before you even put it in front of an editor, so that the process can go more smoothly and the editor can really hone in and help you with the things that you need help with, as opposed to, you know, kind of starting from scratch and it becoming a really, like, several months long project, sometimes over a year or two, really getting a book together if it's not well ready to go. But the book provides some things to look at. It's just a little short guide with here's some things you need to look at. Here's some ways you need to think about your manuscript. And I do encourage rewriting, not just editing.
Right.
Because there's
a
huge difference, don't you think?
Yes, I definitely agree with that. Because, you know, when I released my first book, I was so anxious to get it out to the world because everyone was saying how good it was and how suspenseful it was. And I didn't take the time to get a professional editor. So now all of my reviews are 4-star reviews because some of the editing in the book would stand out. But it wouldn't take away from the story, but it would stand out. So I definitely agree with going over that thing a couple of times, 3 times. So what were some of the challenges that you had facing being a writer? Like, would you run into writer's block, or, you know, would it time be an issue with you? What were some of the things that was in the way of you getting those 2 books out?
Well, editing your book for self-publishing, the hardest thing about that was probably just the process, because it was the first time I myself self-published a book. So for that one, it wasn't hard because I was really just pulling together resources for people, right? So that's, in my opinion, a little bit easier than writing fiction or writing poetry. To me, that's a little easier. But, and also it was short. It was designed to be short on purpose so that people could get through it very quickly and just kind of use it as a reference point.
Right.
The process was probably, my first learning opportunity in terms of the self-publishing world. And then my second one was actually doing Love and Other Monsters, which is available both in print and ebook. So that was a different learning process.
Did you say the name of that book was Love and Other Monsters?
Yes.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I like that. That's nice. Yes, I like that one right there. Love and Other Monsters. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So how do you come up with the ideas for your poetry? What are some of the emotions that you really rear down on when you write that poetry?
You know what's funny is I actually used to do, and I haven't done in a while, I used to do the Poem A Day challenges on the Writer's Digest website. They'd have these Poem A Day challenges, I think, in April and I want to say November. And I would get up in the morning and they would have a writing prompt. And you could write to that prompt or not write to that prompt. But what I found that it did using the writing prompt was it gave me a lot of structure. So I would get up, I'd look at the writing prompt, I'd think about it for a little while, and then I'd go about my day. And then before I went to sleep that night, I would write a poem to that writing prompt.
Oh, okay. So
and
that
it was
gave
just
you a whole...
I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
Oh, no, it just gave me a structure. It gave me a way to kind of fit it into my schedule because that's, you know, I was divorced. I had 3 kids. At one point, we were going to 3 different schools. I was like George Jetson, dropping the kids off every morning and picking them up in the afternoon. It was, you know, lots of movement and all of that. So really writing requires that you sit, I think, and have time to kind of get in touch with your inner muse, if you want to think of it that way. And what that did was it gave me a structure where I could kind of bookend my day with thinking about writing and then actually doing the writing. So for me, that worked really well.
Right. And I kind of work the same way, but I like to write in scenes. I like to, put the scene in my head, what I want it to be, and then let just flow with it, you know, and then double back on it and, you know, do it how it'll fit with the story. So, you know, it's a lot of different ways that people get their points, get their views on paper. But one thing is definitely in common is it takes time.
Yeah.
You have to put that time in. It seems like it's not enough time in the day when you are trying to perfect that perfect scene, you know?
Well, and one of the things that I discourage writers from doing is trying to perfect anything. Because that concept is, you know, we've got this. Now they say, oh, it takes 10,000 hours to become an expert and all that. The research actually shows something different. That's an oversimplification of the process, right, of becoming an expert at something and really knowing and understanding your craft. What it really requires is that you spend time really thinking about your craft and practicing your craft, but it doesn't necessarily have to be 10,000 hours. You can bypass that by just spending the focused time. So I think that by spending time thinking about writing in the morning and thinking about writing and doing the writing in the evening, my mind had a chance to process throughout the day, because, you know, your mind's still going even while you're doing other things, processing
right.
and,
exactly.
and solving problems. And so that's why at night I had the poem inside me and ready to go, you know. And then by making it a habit that I did every day for those 30 days, it really generated the momentum, I think, that was needed to get those poems done. So after a few years of doing that, I had tons of poems, and then I actually got two other poets involved in the project. So we then took all those different poems that we had written, printed them all out, categorized them, and decided how we were going to organize the book. And that's how we were able to get a book published. So it really doesn't necessarily mean that you have to spend, you know, like some people talk about, I won't leave my desk until I write this many words. That
yeah.
approach works for some people. I don't think it would have worked for me given my lifestyle at that time, you know, and being so busy
right.
with the kids and everything.
Okay. Well, we have the guru on the line, ladies and gentlemen. This is Barad from Urban Book Editing, LLC. We're going to take a quick break right now and get these sponsors together, and we'll be right back.
Chicago, the birthplace of the modern gangster. There are thousands of tales that have been told about this city, and yes, these streets have witnessed unimaginable evils on every corner. But this tale of Holy City and K-Town gives you raw, uncut, vivid facts about what lies beneath those pretty lights and recently renovated streets. They did nothing but put the devil in a pretty dress. Our purpose is to expose the things that have become acceptable to the misguided and downtrodden youth.
Poppin' pimps and kinfolk, I'm Slink Johnson. And check it out, if you want to get up on some good reading, go pick up Cry Baby Cry or Not by my man DeWandis Johnson. This book is off the chain. It's about this young girl named Trina from Chicago, right? She came up in a dysfunctional home and her mama name was Jackie. And look here, Jackie, she's something else. But look, I can't spoil the whole book for you. Go pick it up, Cry Baby Cry or Not by my man DeWandis Johnson. One of the most riveting, compelling books I've read since one of them Donald Goins joints. Trust me, check it out. Cry Baby Cry or Not.
You are tuned in with the Late Night Urban Literature Lounge live on the Tribe Family Channel, a Gumbo for the Soul International Family brand. So, Mrs. Barad, you spoke earlier about being the CEO of your urban book editing. How long have you been doing that?
I started the company in 2012 when I was in Atlanta.
Okay, 2012. So you have some years under your belt.
Yes.
Do you just strictly do editing, or is there a combination of publishing or...
So, as I mentioned before, I have a wide and varied background, and in a past life, I did computer graphics and, you know, layout and design and things of that nature in a corporate environment. So one of the things that I do also is I do the layout for books, the interior layout for books, and mm-hmm. I pull together a team to help my authors if they need it. You know, I have a couple of wonderful designers, cover designers at my disposal. I have a couple other folks who are helping me with editing. We can pull together the typing if we have handwritten manuscripts. And I also offer partnership publishing. And that's kind of a hybrid self-publishing model. And
okay,
relatively
so.
New. And what it does is it's where basically I handle the project, but I don't keep a whole bunch of royalties from your sales. You know, if an author wants to work with me, it's more of a small administrative fee that comes out whenever I have to process payments. But otherwise, I help walk them through that process and help them publish their book.
Okay. So what kind of material do you like to publish? What is your genre of preference? Do you have a preferred type of work that you like to work with?
No, actually, I don't. I am interested in so many different types of projects that I don't have a particular favorite. I have a weakness myself for poetry just because that's something I've always dabbled in since I was a kid. So for me, that's probably personally my favorite. But as far as working with clients, I've worked with everything from memoir to urban fiction to Christian, inspirational, self-help. So I've done a lot of different types of books.
Okay. So, like, when you're looking at a project and someone is asking you to edit their project and then ask you to come on board to, you know, do the type of work that you do with them on the helping side,
mm-hmm.
do you go into the project? What makes you gravitate to the project? Like, when you first open it up, do you want to be in awe? Do you want your attention to be grabbed immediately? Or are you the kind of person that likes the story to gradually grow?
Well, I think that there are two different types of stories. So, for example, in the case of fiction, I usually advise my authors to grab the attention quickly. And the mm-hmm. reason is, well, it's twofold. One is most people spend a lot of time watching television and watching movies. And if you notice, the way that movies and television shows are filmed now is very different from the way it was 20 years ago or 30 years ago. Where you, if you look at older movies, you'll see that they have a longer period of kind of exposition where they're setting everything up. Even action
right.
films oftentimes would have a little bit more slow pace in the beginning of the film, as opposed to nowadays, films, television, everything comes out with a bang. If there's not an explosion in the first 5 minutes of an action film, it doesn't. You know, it doesn't capture anybody. That our attention
exactly.
spans have changed. And the same
Definitely.
Thing for our reading. So what I usually tell fiction authors in particular is you really want to grab the audience on that first page. And in fact, if you were trying to go with a traditional publisher, if you're not grabbing the reader in that first page, you may not get past the screener.
Yes, definitely, because that's definitely me. If you don't catch my attention on this first page, I might read the second and the third page, but I'm gonna put it to the side because
mm-hmm.
I need to be entertained. You know, somebody
exactly.
got to be running, somebody got to fall out, something got to happen, and that's why you know the my novel is so controversial because I give it to you raw. I don't sugarcoat it. As soon as you open it up, you're gonna know if you're gonna want to read this book or not.
Right.
So,
and that's
yeah.
what you have to do. You really do have to grab people, particularly with fiction. Now, if you're talking about memoir, if you're talking about inspirational, if you're talking about some of these other types of books, you can take a little bit slower approach, but you still have to put, I think, an intriguing concept in front of the reader pretty quickly. Obviously, it's
right.
not necessarily going to be like in an action-oriented book, you know, in fiction, but you do want to at least put an intriguing concept or question into the person's mind so that they will be inclined to keep reading.
Right. So who are some of your favorite authors? Who do you like to read?
Oh, my goodness. So some of my favorite authors have been I like a lot of Latin American authors, actually. So I
right.
love Gabriel Garcia Marquez. I like Latin American classics in a lot of cases. Isabel Allende is a huge favorite of mine. Absolutely. I'm a huge fan. For American authors, I've read a lot of Alice Walker. I used to read, of course, Maya Angelou, who didn't, especially, you know, when I was coming up. For pop fiction, goodness. I don't know. I like Southern literature, so
right.
so I've read things
right.
like The Sweet Potato Queens, and I've read things like The Help and stuff like that. I've got certain kinds of critiques of some of those books. In fact, my friend Julia Black and I just did a talk about how African-American characters are portrayed in U.S. literature, you know, mainstream, as they call
mm-hmm.
it. U.S. literature, and The Help was one of the books that I had kind of a critique about, Secret Life of Bees, that kind of thing.
Right.
But I love Southern literature. I love Southern literature.
Right. Now, you said Latin American literature. Do you speak? Do you read Spanish?
My reading in Spanish is not great. No, my reading is not great. But my degree is in international relations with an emphasis on Latin America and the Caribbean. So, you know, I studied a lot of that. Politics, economics. Got to live in Mexico for a while. Got to live in Guatemala for a while.
Oh, how was that?
Oh my gosh, amazing! It's interesting because I was actually in Mexico. I was in Oaxaca, Mexico, when the first Gulf War broke out, and I was sitting, you know, in. They have most of the towns there have what they call it. It's a little town square, and they call it the Zocalo, and the hotel where our professor was staying was right there on the Zocalo, and I was downstairs in the kind of restaurant patio area, whatever, watching people protest the first Gulf War. It was fascinating to me. In Mexico, in Oaxaca, Mexico, yes. Just seeing how they perceive what we do is really interesting because it's not the same way, of course, that our media portrays what we do. So it's very interesting to see how other people in other countries react to what the United States does sometimes.
Yeah, because the United States don't show us over here what they do over there. You know, those people
exactly.
over there, they're seeing what the United States is doing to them, and they have a voice over there. America tries to hide and shield what they do to us, like they got clean hands. But
it's really fascinating. It's fascinating to watch because what we see is so different. I was in Guatemala when the Columbine shooting happened. And my maid asked me, she goes, "What's wrong with your children?" she had a legitimate question that she was so concerned, like, "What's wrong that your kids would do something like that?" And all I could tell her was, "That's not our kids. I don't know anything about them." You know, because, you know, I'm not saying that that black kids don't go around doing stuff, but generally there are two reasons that I'm aware of. It's economics or, you know, some kind of conflict has erupted. You know, it's not just, you know, I'm feeling a little put out today, so I'm going to go destroy everybody. That it's a very different way of it. It tends to be directed at particular people, even though it doesn't look like it sometimes. You know, like if you're shooting up a park, but they're shooting up a park because that one person is there and they just don't know how to do things. So it's my way of looking at it. So
it's really night and day. It's really
right, and I know that's really not lovely. That's not comforting on a certain level because it's still violence. It's still, but I think there's something a little comforting, feeling like, well, at least my people aren't just going out just spraying everybody for no reason. There's beef. They're trying to get this one person. They don't know what they're doing, so they do that, and that's not smart. It's not fair. It's not reasonable, but at least I can understand the reason. I had a lot of trouble with school shootings in general.
Yes, me too. Yeah. We're on the same page as that. Even though, like you said, it is not right for, you know, guys to run up in parks and, you know, just empty out the whole clip and all of that extra stuff. But
exactly.
You know,
I really wish they would become much more deliberate. Like, you know, Liam Neeson in Taken or something.
Right.
Learn your craft, man. Learn your craft.
Definitely. I definitely agree with you. I'm laughing because I'm with you on that one. Okay, do you have any upcoming events that you would like to share with our listeners tonight?
I don't have any live events, but I'm really excited because I have partnered with Choppa Style Publishing to put out a book by Hitachi Chaparasi. He's going to be an up-and-coming author. I know it. He's prolific. He's already written, like, I think 13 books already. Already has, like, 13 books written, and we're just going to be pumping them out over time. And the first one that's coming out is Pimp of the Ratchets, And that's going to be out at the end of the month at Thanksgiving time. So it's in pre-sale, pre-order right now. And I'm really excited about that project because it's going to be a long-term partnership with Choppa Style.
Right. Okay. All right, we're going to take another break, Michelle, and we're going to come back and get some more good advice from you.
Okay.
I know building a website can be intimidating, but you need a place where your audience can connect with you. Instead of fighting with technology, try the easiest, most flexible website builder available. With templates for all types of websites, ranging from landing pages to e-commerce, Urban Book Editor's platform makes creating an author website quick and easy. Just add a section, upload your photos and videos, type your text, and you're in business. It couldn't be easier. And if you sign up for an annual plan, you can get 10% off the first year. Just use discount code FIRSTYEAR. That's 1-STYEAR. The number 1-STYEAR in all caps. Take advantage of the 14-day free trial. No credit card is needed. Visit urbanbookeditor.com and select Create Your Author Website from the menu bar at the top of the page. No more struggling with technology. No more paying a small fortune to developers. Create beautiful websites without learning to code. Spend more time writing and less time worrying about your website. Just go to urbanbookeditor.com and select Create Your Author Website. You'll see how easy it is to build a great website to showcase your work. Go to urbanbookeditor.com and select Create Your Author Website today.
We're back live on the Late Night Urban Literature Lounge on Tri-Family Channel, a gumbo for the soul international family brand. So, Michelle, we were talking about your partnership with the young guru writing 13 books already. That should be interesting. And could you tell me his name again?
Hitachi Chaparazzi.
Hitachi Chaparazzi.
Yes.
Okay. So what inspires you to get into this, the helping up-and-coming artists? What is your inspiration?
Well, first of all, I believe it's really important for us to tell our own stories. I mean, every other group gets to tell their stories, and they're also not portrayed in as negative a light as we are. And so I think it's really important that we control our own narratives. But at the same time, I also believe that we have a right to tell true fictional stories. Like if you can have mob stories and you can have all these stories about these other groups, that is not, all Italians are not mobsters, right?
Right.
But nobody
exactly.
says, well, you can't tell mob stories because it makes the Italians look bad. Nobody really says that. Yeah, there are probably a few people who might say that, but they don't typically say that. But for us, there's always this kind of moralizing about what kinds of stories we tell. And I think that we have as much right to tell whatever kind of story we want to entertain ourselves and others. And I think that we should control our own narratives. So it's really important to me to see more African-American people writing books, reading books, creating movies, you know, documentaries, all of these different art forms. We have plenty of musicians, which I come from New Orleans, the home of jazz and all of that. So I'm a big fan of all of that. But the written word and the images on screen, we need to be spending more time creating ourselves. And the stories should be wide and varied.
And they should be relatable, I think.
And relatable.
Yes.
That's what's important, too, because I think it's really easy for us to say, well, you know, you can't tell this kind of story or you shouldn't tell that kind of story because it looks this way or that way. But if there are people who are living this life, why shouldn't their stories be told?
Right. Exactly. I definitely agree with that. That's the way I write. That's the reason why I write what I write. My writing is for the people that you know, feel ashamed about things that they've come across. They don't want to let anyone know that they've been through something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I use my pen to at least open the door or create a sitting where, you know, even if you was commenting on Amazon, writing a review on the book, and you know, something came out that was in the book that you had went through, I use that. I hope that that would be a window for, you know, someone to conversate and try to relieve some of that hurt that they're feeling. You know, so I definitely agree with what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying, and I definitely feel that ownership is a big part of what we need to do in urban America. Well, you know, now they've taken our stink and taken urban America away from us. So, you know, everything is urban now. You got urban electric and urban chicken and urban, you know, so.
Well, but you know what?
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
another piece to this, though. And this is, I think this is something that we don't think about sometimes, is that there's so many different types of lifestyles that African people around the world live, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
and we don't know enough about each other. Because if you are in a gated community, you don't get down to the hood probably. And so you don't know what's
right.
going on there. So then you accept whatever it is that you see on television or in movies just as much as some of the white folks do who see those things. So I think it's important from that perspective, too, for us to learn about each other on a certain level,
mm-hmm.
because it's easy for us to live in our little silos and not understand. And books in particular, because you can really bring out character and you can show depth, that's a really important way for us to do that. But there's also something else, and that is, I remember reading about this African writer, and when she was in school, I think she was in graduate school, she wrote this book and gave it to her professor, and he said, well, I don't find the characters believable. And the reason was because she was writing what she knew. You know, that's what they say, write what you know. And what she
mm-hmm.
knew was being affluent, having maids, you know, having
right.
multiple cars. And he did not believe that this black African woman had that experience. He didn't understand. It didn't ring true to him that this was mm-hmm. her experience, that or this could be any black person's experience on the continent, basically. And I think that's important, too, that we need to be able to share our stories so that they filter into the wider world and other people
right.
come to know us in different dimensions. It's not just the hood stuff. It's not just the suburban stuff. It's not just the college students. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not, we are not a monolith. We are a multifaceted people. And because nobody really understands that, that's another reason we have to get our stories out there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. So is this what you do full time? You are CEO of Urban Book Editor full time.
I am right now working as a technical writer with a software company. I usually maintain at least 3 gigs.
Right.
Because
you got the hustle. You got the hustle. You got to have some money coming from on the left side, right side, and in the back door.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I do the writing and editing. I do coaching. And part of that is the publishing and helping people get their books out. But I also do technical writing. So right now I'm working with a software company, and I also am doing, you know, under my business, I do some technical writing.
Okay, so you said coaching. What would your coaching entail?
So I've done some business coaching with some folks, helping them to get their business off the ground, helping them with strategizing their marketing a little bit, helping them with their website, and just generally getting their business up and running and figuring out how they're going to start marketing their business. Also, book development and helping authors to go, as I mentioned, through that book development to publishing process.
Right. So how important do you feel marketing is with your product?
Oh, marketing is critical. I mean, here's the first thing that I usually end up saying to authors. Most authors don't realize that when they decide they're going to publish a book, they're starting a business.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing they don't realize, and this was actually hard for me starting my business too. When you start a business, you are not just in the business of doing whatever it is that you do. So if you're a writer and you're trying to sell your book, you're not just in the business of writing books. You're in the business of marketing books. That's actually your primary business, because if you're not marketing, you're not getting business and nobody's buying your book. So that is,
preach,
I think,
preach.
That's like the second, I think that was really the hardest thing for me starting my business, was realizing, oh, I've got to get the word out about what I'm doing. And then the next part related to that is, once you realize you do need to market, then realizing that marketing, number one, never stops, and number two, continually has to be tweaked for you to figure out what is the best way to market your business
and what is working.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So give us a few pointers on marketing a fiction piece. What would be an urban fiction piece? You know, something that's because I like gritty. I like gritty.
Right.
I like the shock effect. I like, you know, grabbing those imaginary pearls. That's
right,
that's my
right,
thing.
Right.
Right. So give us some tips on how you would market. Who would you market that to, and how would you find that market?
Okay, so it's going to depend on the book, right?
Yes.
It is going to depend. Even within the urban market, you need to segment your audience. So you can have multiple segments. And by that I mean, you might say, I'm going to market this book is, and every author says, oh, I want everybody to read my book. Of course you want everybody to read your book. Of course you
mm-hmm.
do. But who are you going to market it to? And by that I mean, who are you talking to? So are you talking to 20-somethings? Because the way you talk to a 20-something is very different from the way you talk to a 40 or 50-something. Doesn't mean that the 20-something and the 50-something wouldn't enjoy your book. They both probably would. But the way you're going to talk to them about the book is going to be different.
Right.
And
yeah.
That's really what marketing is figuring out how you're communicating with your audience.
Yeah, so you want to hit those 20-year-olds with, turn up, turn up, turn up, we got a new release. You know.
Right, right.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we do have the guru on the line. We have the guru on the line. She is multitasking right now. Michelle Barad. She's handling her thing around here, man. We really appreciate you coming in on this first show. What is one piece of advice that you would give a first time author? Like, if he's been, you know how people just sit out around for years and years and say, I'm going to write a book about my life. I'm really going to get into it. And they finally sit down and put the pen to the paper. Well, now I just told how old I was. You know, they get out their laptop. They get out their laptop and they get to typing. What is some good advice that you would tell that person?
Well, I'm going to back up and say that the average person who says that they want to write a book actually doesn't sit down and start doing it. And so there are a couple of reasons for that in my experience. One is they're scared. They either feel like they, and this may not be on a conscious level. This may be just kind of like this back of the mind kind of fear and anxiety. Are people even interested? I've heard this so many times. Is anybody even interested in what I have to say? You do not know whose life you're going to touch with your story. So that's the first thing I would tell any aspiring author, anyone who thinks they have a book in their heart, that if you feel the desire, if you really, because there are people who go through life and never think that they want to write a book, never. But if you have had that feeling come into your heart that you want to tell a story, there is a reason for it. And I think that you should give it a shot, because what's the worst that can happen? Nobody's going to come and break your kneecaps over it. So give it a shot.
It depends what you put on. It depends on what you put on the page. Now, people like to hear stuff.
That's possible, but that's why you're going to fictionalize it.
Right. You got to change the names up. Don't put Derek's
change
name
the
in
names.
Name. Derek.
Right. Change the names. Change the names to protect the guilty. But go ahead and do it. But the main thing I want to tell them is if you feel intimidated by writing, because some people just plain feel intimidated by that, you're on your smartphone all day long. I know because I see it. I watch you. You're constantly touching that phone. Record into the phone.
Right.
Record into the phone. There are apps that you can get that will let you record, and they'll do the transcription for you.
Yeah. Well, I just learned something. You know I'm old. You just taught me something. Because I'm still typing on this old keyboard.
Hey, man, I'm still a keyboarder myself, but if there are a lot of people who get nervous about that. Staring at that blank Word doc or whatever stresses them out, or looking at a blank page. But they're used to being on their phone. They could do it while they're driving, while they're commuting in the morning. And I'm going to give you two apps that you can just so that I like to give people real takeaways. So one of them, Dragon, naturally speaking, has a app for the phone that you can talk into it, and it'll type all your words for you right there. I think it's available. I have mine on my iPhone, and I think it's like $15 bucks a month subscription, something like that. So you can get that. The other app that I like actually ties to a transcription service. It's called Rev. I use Rev for transcription a lot, and they have an app for the phone. You can talk right into it, and they'll do transcription. I think you can send it for a person to transcribe, which, of course, is a little more expensive, but definitely worth the price of admission, in my opinion. And then the third one is actually a web tool. I think the company's based out of England. It's called Trint, T-R-I-N-T. And if you just record an MP3 file, you can upload it to their website. It's like $15 for an hour's worth of recording, and it'll do AI translation. That's artificial intelligence translation, and then you can go through and just correct whatever it messes up. It'll let you listen, and you can go through the transcript, and then you can download it to your Word file.
Right. Yeah. I tried that Dragon. I tried that Dragon Naturally Speak, and I guess I was too Southern for the thing. It was kind of couldn't understand what I was saying. Like I was speaking Ebonics or something. But that was
you have to train it.
Yeah, that was like maybe 7 years ago. They stepped the game up since then.
It is a lot better than it used to be because I tried Dragon about 10 years ago and I wasn't impressed. But this new app, and they've steadily gotten better over time. But you do have to train it. You are going to teach it a little, especially if you're using the desktop app. You're going to spend some time teaching it. But I find that it works really well as long as you take your time. You don't rush through. And then those others are really good. Rev and Trint are good if you just want to talk at a normal pace. Trint AI is pretty good if you're in a quiet environment or, if you're talking into your headset, it should be good.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take another break and come back with Michelle, the guru, giving us all the jewels.
Chicago, the birthplace of the modern gangster. There are thousands of tales that have been told about this city, and yes, these streets have witnessed unimaginable evils on every corner. But this tale of Holy City and K-Town gives you raw, uncut, vivid facts about what lies beneath those pretty lights and recently renovated streets. They did nothing but put the devil in a pretty dress. Our purpose is to expose the things that have become acceptable to the misguided and downtrodden youth.
Poppin' pimps and kinfolk, I'm Slink Johnson, and check it out. If you want to get up on some good reading, go pick up Cry Baby Cry or Not by my man DeWandis Johnson. This book is off the chain. It's about this young girl named Trina from Chicago, right? She came up in a dysfunctional home, and her mama name was Jackie. And look here, Jackie, she's something else. But look, I can't spoil a whole book for you. Go pick it up, Cry Baby Cry or Not by my man DeWandis Johnson. One of the most riveting, compelling books I've read since one of them Donald Goins joints. Trust me, check it out. Cry Baby Cry or Not.
This is the Late Night Urban Literature Lounge live on the Tribe Family Channel. A gumbo for the soul in the National Family brand. We are live with Michelle Barad, CEO of Urban Book Editor, LLC. So, Michelle, tell us if we were trying to get in contact with you to see if we wanted to get a new piece of work edited, or, you know, wanted to see further about your coaching, because I think that's a good piece that you offer. How can we get in touch with you?
Well, folks can reach out to me at urbanbookeditor.com, and they can book a call. You can also reach me at michellebarard.com, michellebarard.com, and you can schedule a call right on my calendar at a time that works well for you, and we'll meet and discuss your project and see how we can help move it forward.
Okay. Now, this is a personal question. How expensive are you? Because you come with a lot of credentials. You know, you got to pay for those credentials. It took you some while. You put in some time to get those credentials. So,
yeah.
What are the price ranges for, say a consultation on a coaching? Because I like that idea. You know, I'm new to the editing. I mean, I'm new to the urban fiction world. You know, I've only published here two books. The sequel is dropping January 2020, Cry Baby Cry or Not. But what would be a price for the coaching?
Well, for a discovery call, just to get in here and get some ideas generated, find out where you are and point you in the right direction, that's a short call, $45. For more, sir?
Yeah, that is extremely affordable.
Yes, I try to make that affordable. Yeah. And that's a way for us to get to know one another, too, to decide if we want to work together further.
Right. So what would be some things that would knock you away or take you away from working with up-and-coming artists? If he's not listening, or, you know, if he thinks you know have all the answers. Because it's rough out here. It's rough out here, Michelle. You hear me? So
yeah,
what are the things that would take you away from a project?
I have only had two clients that I would say things did not work out well. Or one actually wasn't. So you have to be willing. There are a couple of things you have to be willing to do when you are writing a book and when you're working with an editor or someone who's coaching you through book development or what have you. You have to be willing to take criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And the criticism is not of you personally. The criticism is of the manuscript. And it's not meant to demoralize or anything. It's to give you ideas of where you can improve. And so the clients that I work best with are people who, number one, do not feel like their words are so precious that they cannot be cut.
Mm-hmm.
If you come to me with 150,000 word manuscript, it is too long for urban fiction. You either need to make it multiple books, or you need to cut some words. That's all there is to it. Urban fiction, because there's a marketing component, remember? Everything is, you have to look at the market. Now, if you want to go mainstream, highbrow literature, and I mean literature, you know what I mean? You can maybe get away with that, but you have to be an amazing writer to get away with that. You're talking like Umberto Eco and those kinds of folks that can do that. Or you have to be writing fantasy, like Harry Potter type stuff. Those books can get very big. But again, you have to be outstanding in your writing.
Mm-hmm.
Your plot has to be extremely tight. Your characters have to be well developed. You have to work at that. In editing your book for self-publishing, one of the things I say is some of the most successful authors in the world rewrite their manuscripts sometimes up to 7 times.
Hmm. Yeah. So when you say that, I take away from that writing is extremely time-taking. You have to be dedicated to putting out a piece worthy of being on the bestsellers list. That's what I took away from that.
Well, listen, not everybody's going to be a bestseller. I think you have to be, what you really have to be is focused on telling your story in the best possible way that you can. That's
right.
Really what my goal is to help you tell your story in the best possible way. And in order to do that, you may have to make changes, because just because your mom and them say the book is good doesn't mean that it's marketable.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, it's that love, that family love, it's motivation. It's not it's sometimes crippling. Most of the time, the family is the ones that cripple, because they don't have you put in that extra work to home on your craft. They just say, my baby can write. My baby wrote a book, and it's good,
too. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it might be good. I've read, in fact, that was one of the reasons I started the company, because I was reading really good stories, but they were not
right.
Well written, or there was a tendency for word misuse that just from my mind drove me insane. I will never forget this one book I read. I literally was reading it and going, that's the wrong word. I know that's
mm-hmm.
the wrong word. That's the wrong word. It distressed me so much that I grabbed the book on the way out the door to work that morning and took it with me, so that as soon as I got to my computer, I would be able to go on dictionary.com and verify that that was the wrong word. And that is not the reaction you want anybody to have to anything in your book. And the reason is because fiction in particular, it is important that people suspend their disbelief.
Right.
And anything that takes the person out of the story and distracts them from your story is what you don't want them to experience.
Right. Spoken by the guru, ladies and gentlemen. Spoken by the guru. So, I remember being on your show, Michelle.
Yeah?
It was called Somewhere in the Middle.
Yes,
right?
Sir.
Yeah, the podcast show. Now, this was probably one of the best interviews that I had done while I was promoting Cry Baby Cry or Not. And, it's definitely come full circle. You're very informational. You're very down to earth. You know, you have a lot of jewels. So any of the up-and-coming artists that want to be guided with some guidance that's worth taking, please contact Michelle Barad. I think that she'll point you in the right direction to be successful. So, again, Ms. Barad, would you like to give the listeners again your information so they can contact you and get the ball rolling on their dreams?
Well, definitely. First of all, I just want to say thank you for having me on the show. It's been fun. I love having discussions like this. So thank you very much. But guys, if you want to just connect with me, reach out to me at urbanbookeditor.com or michellebarard.com, michellebarard.com. And also, if you're looking for a good book to read, we have Pimper to Ratchets. Book one is coming out in cooperation with Choppa Style Publishing. You can get to that pre-order page by going to rebrand.ly/PODR book 1. That's the number one. So that's PODR for Pimp of the Ratchets, book, and the number one on Rebrandly. So reach out and, you know, and also don't forget to check out the podcast, Somewhere in the Middle. You can find that twice a month on Fridays at the Somewhere in the Middle podcast.com.
Definitely. A great show. A great show, Somewhere in the Middle. It's very comfortable. I advise you, if you're coming around and you're trying to push that book, go and talk to Michelle Barad about it. Say, Michelle, I appreciate you coming through and, you know, dropping these jewels on us. We'd love to have you back if you ever need to do a little promoting or, you know, just come back and conversate with us.
I love it. I love chatting with you, so I'll be back often. Don't extend an invitation like that, because I will be back harassing you constantly.
It's not harassing when you like what's going on. Well, thank you, Michelle. I appreciate it. You
thank
have a great
you.
Night, okay? Thank you guys for tuning in to the Late Night Urban Literature Lounge live on the Tribe Family Channel. We'll see you next show in 2 weeks from today. You have a great night.